It's PacView's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Woodland Hills Shree, special guest host Jackie Danowski from Flywheel, and I'm PVSB, also from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 29th, an ACDS annual week, and it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We find them masterfully intriguing. We hope you do too. They're brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com, it's retail right now. Sheree, lead us off, would you?
Albertsons has been named the 2024 winner of the Webby Award for People's Voice Top Shopping and Retail App. I am so immensely proud of the shopper experience team, our engineering counterparts, and all of our cross-functional partners across the organization. Cheers to your hard work and customer obsession, said Jill Pavlovich, SVP of Customer Experience at Albertsons. 23 individual Albertsons associates were recognized in earning this award. Congratulations to all of you, and over to you, Melissa.
Best Buy and CNET are combining their ad inventory. Consumer electronics retailer Best Buy and digital publisher CNET are teaming up to create a new retail media model. The electronics retailer and the publisher are combining their ad inventory, allowing advertisers to buy across Best Buy Ads retail media network and alongside CNET's tech review-focused editorial content, and measure whether ads seen on either platform drove sales. In a month-long survey during which CNET content was displayed nationally across Best Buy's in-store TV walls, 86% of respondents said the content made them more confident in their purchases. It also garnered a 25% lift in purchase intent, according to the companies. Super interesting space as retailers continue to look for differentiation.
Thank you, Melissa. The National Association of Chain Drugstore annual meeting set to take place this week in Palm Beach, Florida. The annual meeting of the NACDS is set to begin Sunday, April 27th at the Breakers Hotel in Palm Beach, Florida. Featured speakers include Walter Isaacson and Arthur C. Brooks. NACDS annual is noted for the strategic meetings that transpire between retailers, consumer goods manufacturers, sales and marketing agencies, and other ecosystem service partners. If you're on a budget, make sure to get a hot dog at the poolside restaurant at $27. It is the least expensive menu entree offered at this five-star resort. Brian, Sheree, and Andrea are all in attendance this year. Closing it out, Jackie.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free hits shelves. Red Bull is launching a new permanent sugar-free edition this summer. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free combines raspberry and forest fruits with herbal notes of verbena. It is the second new variant introduced by the brand this year, and the first fully sugar-free flavor in its portfolio, aiming to attract new shoppers to the category. Red Bull editions have been largely incremental to the brand, with 50% of edition buyers being new to Red Bull as they grow their flavor offering.
Thank you, Jackie, and welcome as a guest host to the Fresh Four. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our hosts, Sheree Rajagopalan, Peter V.S. Bond, and Brian Gildenberg, explore how brands and retailers engage consumers in an increasingly digitally driven world. And now, the CPG Guys. Hello and welcome to the CPG Guys podcast. I am PVSB, and when I'm not co-hosting this podcast, along with my partners, I work at Flywheel, a division of Omnicom that helps enterprise brands grow their commerce business. Along for our conversation today, hey, he's my fellow co-founder of the CPG Guys. Please listen to his elder daughter, Rhea Raj. Her music can be found at RhaRaj.com, link in the digital liner notes of this episode, and follow his younger daughter, Lara, on her journey as a founding member of the Cat's Eye Girls Band, which debuts its first album in June. He's my podcast partner. He's my ride or die. He's my best friend. He's the man known as Sheree. Sheree, how's La La Land? What's going on out there? Opening day yesterday. Both our teams did well.
Juan Soto got his RBI. Not only that, he saved the game with a throw from all the way out in right field to home plate. Expecting, but the rotation disappointed. Wasn't expecting anything better from Nestor Cortez after his surgery last year. Big bet Rodon. Let's see how it goes this year. Stroman is tomorrow. So I'm keeping the faith. It's one game in the season, and right now we're 1-0. So I'll take the 1-0.
No one's mathematically eliminated except, well, I was hoping the Giants would be, but, you know, that's how I feel about San Francisco. That's another story. Sri, thanks for joining me as always. Before we get to our guest, I want to ask you in the audience to help spread the word about this community we've created in the CPG Guys. Beyond sharing the podcast with your friends and your colleagues, if you're using Apple Podcast or Spotify as your preferred listening platform, please, please, please leave a rating. Why? Because it helps feed the algorithm that makes our podcast more findable by CPG retail professionals like you who are looking to be educated and entertained. And while you're there, leaving a rating, choose whatever number you want. I like the number 5. I know Sri does too. But leave us a review too, because we want to hear feedback from you, what you think, what you like, what you don't like, what you want more of, what you want less of. That'll help us fine tailor this podcast, tune it to the needs and desires of our audience. And that's you. We're also very happy that CPG Guys is part of an impressive collective of highly rated podcasts, including Fast Forward, hosted by our own Brian Gildenberg, CPG Scoop with Risa and Jennifer, and of course, across the pond, the FMCG Guys. We were just with Daniel at Shop Talk. And we'll see him again. I know I'm going over for Shop Talk Europe in June, but Daniel Afrain and Christine are talking FMCG with a whole bunch of luminaries in that part of the world. And finally, we are so incredibly proud of our allyship with Next Up, formerly known as Network of Executive Women, whose mission it is to advance the cause of women in business and to promote gender equality in the workplace. Next Up has stupendous educational and networking resources available to its members. And of course, let's not forget, Sri serves as director of Next Up. Links to our podcast, our sister cast, our landing page on Next Up, and the social media profiles of Sri's daughters, Rhea and Lara, they can all be found in the digital liner notes of this episode. Like 90%+ of you are listening on a mobile device. Just toggle back to the device, you know, the app, and there'll be a section in the episode with hyperlinks and digital liner notes. It's all there. Don't have to write anything down. You can find it all very simply, and you can learn as you're listening to this conversation. Speaking of which, let's get the conversation with today's guest going. You know, reaching consumers at opportune moments in order to deliver relevant messaging is truly the goal of marketers, right? With 85% of sales still occurring in brick and mortar stores, and 3 in 4 Americans shopping in person at physical stores at least once a week, the store is an essential part of the customer journey. With massive reach and high frequency, the store has the potential to become a major advertising channel. Although in-store advertising is not new, you don't typically see it in the list of today's major media channels. With the digitization of the store, the deprecation of third-party cookies, and the decline of linear television, there seems to be a space emerging for in-store advertising. Yet this is still work to do in defining where it fits in to a brand's media strategy and budget. So we're partnering on this episode with Grocery TV, a company that is making in-store retail media more accessible, scalable, and efficient. Here to speak with us about how retailers are able to monetize their stores through higher quality touch points for their customers. Now, brands can access massive in-store audiences in brand-safe retail environments is the founder and CEO of Grocery TV. Please join Sri and me in welcoming to the podcast, Marlo Nickel. Marlo, how you doing? Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate Peter and Sri and doing well. Excited to talk to y'all. So thanks for
Yeah, I remember I sat in your session at Advertising Week last week, and I was talking with you and your team, and we're so glad to be able to have you on the podcast to talk about the great vision you see for in-store relevant and personalized media. Before we get to our questions, why don't you just start by sharing with our audience a high-level overview of Grocery TV?
Of course. Yeah. I mean, so you kind of touched on at the top of this, but we're an in-store retail media network, been doing this for a while and kind of even before it was a hot topic that people were talking about. So we've really helped try to pave the way for what's becoming, I think, a more and more exciting category. In terms of just some basic metrics, you know, we're in all 50 states, partner with over 200 retailers and about 4,400 grocery stores around the U.S. And that lets us reach an audience of about 70 million U.S. shoppers, as you mentioned, on a weekly basis. So really compelling, I think, audience to reach. And, you know, we're still growing. So there's a lot more to come. You know, when you look at the grocery market, as much as we've been able to scale this business, we've still got only about 15% of U.S. grocery. So there's a lot ahead, and we're excited to see where the future holds.
Thank you for that that overview. We're going to include in the digital liner notes this episode links to your LinkedIn profile, to Grocery TV's LinkedIn page, and of course to your website, so our listeners can learn and explore while they're listening to the conversation we have ahead of us. So why don't we get to the questions Sri and I have prepared? I'll kick us off. We're always a sucker for a good origin story. So what is the origin story behind Grocery TV? You know, what kind of gap in the market did you identify that led to the creation of your business? And how have you tried to set yourself apart from the competitive set that is also exploring this particular channel?
Yeah, I love to joke a lot of times that I'm not the originator of the idea. I actually got kind of pulled into this business by some folks that I've been in retail forever. So, you know, two of the kind of guys that originally had the idea, it's actually the dad and uncle of my co-founder, Don Elke. And they've been manufacturing grocery checkout fixtures for the last two decades. They kind of own that market. You walk in a grocery store to check out, odds are that fixture with the gum and candy on it, they were the ones that made that. And they had really seen this opportunity to lift conversion rates and overall category sales in the checkout aisle by increasing awareness, which that insight's maybe kind of obvious to the audience, but it's something that is really true for the whole store and something that I think is sort of the ethos of what we're trying to do here. So when I first started working with them, I was basically helping them realize that vision, put the hardware and the software together to make it possible to have digital signage in the checkout aisle and really achieve that goal of lifting conversion rates and category sales by making customers more aware of what was going on there, what products were available and that kind of stuff. But obviously the checkout aisle is just one part of the store. And so from there, we've really expanded to be a full store platform. And I think what's something that was not obvious going into the business that we found over time is that really the audience in store is incredibly valuable to reach and actually not just to endemic brands, but to non-endemic brands as well. I know y'all focus more on CPG, but it's been cool to see for the retailers that, you know, the audience they have is just, it's something that's appreciated by every kind of brand, not just the ones that sell stuff in stores. And in terms of how we're different as a business, I mean, in one basic way, like we've been doing this, I think, longer than most people. So we've learned a lot from that. You know, most folks, I think, start with kind of the largest retailers out there. They're going and focusing on, you know, your national retailers like a Kroger or an Albertsons or an Ahold. We really kind of started at the smallest retailers, you know, your mom and pops, the Piggly Wigglies. And we worked our way up from that to kind of the key regionals, like a ShopRite up in the Northeast. And, you know, ultimately the goal is to work with every retailer that's out there. But because we started with the smallest ones, we've built a model that from an operational standpoint is just far more efficient than most of the other folks that are in our space. So that really lets us work with any kind of retailer. And I think is a unique advantage that gives us scale that's tough to match. And it means that when we work with a retailer, you know, from like a margin standpoint, from a deployment standpoint, we just know how to do this really efficiently and effectively.
Marlo, welcome to the CPG guys, as well as congratulations on all the scale. You know, starting from Ma and Pa's and reaching the scale that you have is no easy feat. Also, the numbers that you quoted, 4,400 stores strength, the reach, as well as a 70 million audience on a weekly basis. Those are monthly basis. Those are all big numbers to work with. And I love that you're also focused on non-endemic for just for clarification purposes for our audience. So let's say it's I don't know, life insurance, car insurance. That's what you meant by non-endemic advertising as well, right? Because of the audience scale?
Yep, exactly. You know, your Geico, State Farm of the world, for sure. Even things like, you know, Chase Bank, right? Like the number of transactions that are happening every day in a grocery store, it's crazy. And it tends to be the largest purchase on a weekly basis by shoppers. And so we didn't expect it going in, but I mean, not surprisingly, we're making that choice of which credit card to pull out of your wallet. It helps if they see a message that says, hey, you know, this credit card is going to give you a bit more rewards on grocery.
No, this is great because I think it's a common misconception that our audience is CPG centric only. We actually have a lot of Wall Street analysts and business analysts listening in because they treat the CPG guys as a learning platform for other parts of the fence as well as investors. As you kind of scaled up on this digital mechanism of in-store TV, and you started focusing on both endemic and non-endemic, I got to imagine the decline in traditional advertising platforms, print, linear TV, now the cookie-less world, while induced a lot of fear a year ago, we're only a few weeks and months away from the reality of that. Catching up, what does that advertising future present for you for in-store digital advertising? I got to imagine it's huge because none of these problems apply.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what we've always been excited about is, in some ways, we're kind of getting back to the basics of advertising, right? I think there was this idea of performance marketing. And basically, if I could just know every bit of information about someone, I could almost, you know, serve them at the right ad at the right time and kind of like hack my way, like growth hack my way to performance. But I think we're moving back to a state where you really just want to pick channels that are great, you know, that reach the right audience, do it in a brand safe way, that's contextually relevant, that people actually want to pay attention to. And so that's what we're really excited about with where we're at with the in-store space, right? Like people are going there to shop. It's not weird to see advertising there because we control the screens. You know, we know the content's going to show up on it as expected by the brand. So we do think it's a really compelling format. Obviously, with the growth of retail media as a category that's just been explosive, there's been this question of like, okay, what's next, right? Like, how do you get to 100 billion in retail media spend? And so I think in-store is like the obvious next step that everyone talks about, because you mentioned earlier at the top of this, but like 85% of transactions are happening in-store. And for retailers that aren't Amazon, you know, your in-store audience, that's the true competitive advantage, right? Like that's what you want to go and leverage. And so I think that's where, you know, we get excited about helping lead that way forward and create this new category. I will say to your points about like decline of linear TV and the cookieless future, like the opportunity there, I think, is to answer one of the challenges with in-store, which is, you know, where does the budget come from? Because historically, the spend in-store is coming from your shopper marketing teams. It's very like bottom of funnel tactics. It's like strictly conversion. You're dropping price, trying to get on shelf. You're paying for display. And the idea of like a true media channel has never really entered into that conversation or those budgets. And so when you look at linear TV decline and you're trying to figure out how else am I going to get reach, in-store is, I think, a really cool channel that started to come into availability that you can basically shift some of that budget over and get the reach you used to get in a way that's similarly safe and effective. So, you know, I think in short, that's kind of some of the bits that keep us excited about this.
That's terrific, Marlo. So with that in mind, why don't you walk us through the core set of solutions that you're seeking to offer endemic and non-endemic advertisers that are leveraging your platform?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest one is just giving them access to the audience in an in-store environment, right? And doing it in a way that is at scale. So we've always said we want to have national reach. You know, we talk about how we're in all 50 states now, but we want to keep growing that, right? Have more and more density within those states, within the markets that they want access to. What's cool about grocery, of course, is you go most people on a weekly basis to get your groceries. A lot of people actually do multiple stores that they're going to go to, though. They'll go to one for maybe the more value purchases, another for maybe the more expensive things that they are specialty that they want to buy. And so as we have more penetration into markets, we can actually reach audiences, you know, at a greater scale, but also with higher frequency. Of course, there's the brand safe part of it and the contextual relevance that like people are in that buying mindset. They're there to buy things. So it's normal to see advertising. But I think where the future is headed in terms of the audience is when you go from not just being the grocery store, but to the different areas within it. So, you know, we talk a lot about entrance being a really key touch point because everybody comes through there and that's right at the start of the journey. We talk a lot about kind of the front end or checkout area being really interesting because that's like one of the highest dwell time parts of the journey. And if you want to have a message that's more educational, like especially a new product launch, that's a place to do it. And then there's things like pharmacy where that's going to have unique relevance to certain brands. But as you get more into the store, like some of the departments or specific categories, I think that's going to open up opportunities for brands that are a little bit different, right? Where you're maybe doing co-marketing with different types of products or, you know, referencing the seasons that you're in. So it's going to become more and more, I think, dynamic as there's more types of inventory available and not just like, you know, access to a store, but different parts of it. So that's kind of the audience side. And then separately, there's this question of measurement and everybody talks about how important it is, whether you're online or anywhere else. And there's a lot of tools that are starting to come up that are pretty cool for in-store. The biggest one is just having access to first-party data that lets you measure lift, right? Everybody that sells a product in-store wants to know if they saw sales go up. But you can also do things like brand lift. And there's a lot of different companies that we work with that allow us to run those kind of studies and see more of that top of funnel kind of awareness improvement. If you're looking at stuff like site traffic, there are ways to measure that now. And then foot traffic too. So you can look at like for the geofence of all the people that came in the store, did that creative have an impact that led them to coming to another retail location that advertiser was trying to drive traffic to? And then the last thing that we're starting to dip our toes into is just like native content. So we do custom entertainment content every week for our retail partners. And the idea is that we can start basically blending in some of the advertisers into that. So if it's, you know, the channel that does cooking tips, right, we could show how a new product for a CPG brand could be relevant to that cooking tip, right? But I think, you know, TBD on what's coming. I mean, there's just a lot of, right now we're trying to build the infrastructure. And then I think from there, that's when the ideas will start to come.
That's awesome, Marlo. Thank you for pointing that out. It's exciting that you actually provide custom content for those very entertainment channels with the cooking example that you gave. So let's get a little bit technical over here. For brands who want to work with you, What's the nature of the relationship you establish with the retailers, the 4,400 odd stores that you have and growing for the platform? Do you ask that they give you capital to invest? Do they have to invest capital? And do brands work with you? Are you a white label solution for retailers and through the RMN? And most brands don't even know that you are in the background. Like, how does this whole ecosystem work? Give us 360.
Yeah, it's a complicated one. But you talked about a lot of the important points there. So the first one is we typically see the retailer as our partner, not a customer. And we're coming in and we're trying to help them build a network that's going to be really exciting for brands to have access to and also for their marketing teams to promote content. And to date, the way the model has worked with kind of your like regional retailers down to more of your independents, they don't want to put the capital expenditure up to build the network and they're trying to keep their OPEX costs down. And so we're a pretty good partner in that we can come in and provide that for them. And they basically can just say, yep, here's the kind of network I want to build. And then we handle that side of it. And then through the monetization efforts that we're also leading for them, we can basically capitalize that and allow them to have it just saying that, you know, here's the parts that we want to be in and we can move forward. I will say for some of the larger retailers and the conversations we've been having, there is an interest in them like fully owning the network and like taking on the CapEx costs. And so in those cases, there's ways we can work with them too. It's just a bit of a different business model. But in either case, I think what differentiates us, as I kind of said earlier, is we know how to build these networks in like the most operationally efficient way that you can. And so whether the retailer is taking on the CapEx or we are, we can basically deploy that network at scale quickly and efficiently. In terms of the monetization side, as I kind of mentioned, for most retailers we work with today, we handle that for them. But I think more and more what we're seeing is that as RMNs get stood up, we're also providing our inventory into those RMNs. And so letting them go and sell it as more of a white labeled solution, like you're saying, as a part of a broader package that they're offering to the brands they work with. Typically, when we're going to do monetization, it's going to be more at a national scale. We're selling kind of the broader network that includes lots of different retailers in it. And that tends to be a lot more of incremental budgets that the retailers didn't have access to previously. So we can actually kind of play nice together and both tap into different areas and objectives from a brand standpoint.
I want to remind our audience that we are speaking today with Marlo Nickel. He's the founder and CEO of Grocery TV. So that's really interesting. As you start talking about tapping into those budgets, right, measurement's going to become increasingly important, right? It's the coin of the realm in retail media as brands are really seeking to justify shifting their budgets from traditional platforms like linear TV, where frankly, they didn't have that kind of performance measurement, and they get used to seeing that in what, you know, retail media 1.0, the on-site activity, right? And so how are you measuring the effectiveness of advertising campaigns that you're putting out on Grocery TV? Like, what's under the hood of your measurement capabilities?
Yeah, I mean, I think to your point, we're a little bit different than the retail media on-site advertising that exists today, right, on the websites for those retailers, because it doesn't naturally have like a click through or something, right?
Right.
And so it's not going to have that real time kind of measurement that I think you would expect from a platform online. It's probably more equivalent to your TV kind of channels where you can definitely do measurement, but it's going to be done more in a like rigorous test and control kind of setting. And then you're basically like providing that back to the client after the campaign finishes. And so for a lot of campaigns, like if it's, especially if it's an endemic brand that's sold in store, the most obvious one is sales lift. And so we're setting up a test and control group and basically showing, you know, this one did X amount of sales, this one did Y, and here's kind of the lift that you got out of it. Again, as I mentioned earlier, you can do lots of other kinds of studies from general brand lift to foot traffic if you're another retail location, site traffic. And then one that we're starting to tap into as well is share of voice. So if it's really important for you to like own that store environment for your category, we can kind of show for within the category that your brand is in, you know, what your share of voice was during the run of that campaign or further look back periods. But I think it's something that's still developing. I mean, at the end of the day, like there's probably going to have to be something like the Nielsen standards around like, you know, market mix analyses, right? And we're trying to work with a number of different partners to get there. Because at the end of the day, like this is a video format, right? Like many of the others. And it's just going to be a question of, you know, what is the easiest way for brands to measure it? And then how do we make sure that that's available to them?
Awesome. I think the biggest thing I picked up there is the whole test and control methodology and how that's the focus to be able to say, all the incremental stuff that you spoke to, whether it's footfall, site traffic, share of voice, brand lift, things of that nature. So let's put that in the backdrop now. And let me ask you, can you give an example to our audience of any success stories, case studies perhaps, where indeed this test and control methodology, when applied, has indeed resulted in significant lift anchored on Grocery TV?
Yeah. Over the last, call it 5 years, we've done quite a few of these kinds of case studies, both for brands that are in all different parts of the store and then also non-endemic ones. But I think, again, for your audience, probably the most interesting is going to be more on the endemic side, so pure sales lift. We're actually just about to release the results of a meta study that looks at our studies over these last 5 years. And really the headline here is that we saw an average of 14% lift for brands that are sold through all kinds of different parts of the store. And that's, of course, going to be a range, right? Some are as high as 30%, some are more in the single digits. But we'll be releasing that study this week if possible and excited to share that out with everybody. You can, of course, go to our website and we've got case studies for a ton of different brands on there that we've kind of built up over the years that go into this meta-analysis. But I think the other thing that's exciting that we're just starting to dig into is really what happens outside the store environment, because obviously if you can deliver a message to the right audience, like that can change behavior beyond the footprint of that store. And so we're starting to look at like what's the incremental lift beyond that store footprint, right? And do you see behavior change broadly for that audience? But more to come there. That's a bit earlier stages.
Before I get to my next question, I'm really curious back to the endemic versus non-endemic. Obviously the endemic are playing within the ecosystem, the retailers you're partnering with. How are you going about sourcing these? How are they coming to you, the non-endemic ones, you know, not being necessarily aware of your existence, that you have something that could be compelling to them? Like, where's the source?
I mean, I think like any media channel, we do a mix of both programmatic and managed service in terms of how we work with clients. And so, you know, we have some folks where we're directly reaching out and talking to the client themselves or the agency that represents them. And again, just telling the story about the audience and how compelling it is to be able to get in front of them. And ideally understanding like for that particular brand, what their objectives are. So, you know, I'd kind of mentioned like a financial provider, like a Chase that has credit cards, right? Like we can say to them, hey, you've got a grocery focused credit card. We can get you in front of 20,000 points of sale across the US and all 50 states, you know, right before people are pulling the credit cards out. So like it starts to resonate with them.
So then that dovetails into my final question for you, and I sure he's got one after me, but how do brands typically get started in leveraging a meaningful in-store digital advertising program, and what services do you provide along with the distribution platform to help make that an effective campaign and mechanism for advertising their brands?
Yeah, in terms of getting started, I mean, of course, love it when people reach out to us directly, but I also recognize that a lot of times we're part of a broader campaign and got to make it easy for them to traffic it. So as I'd mentioned, you know, either coming through programmatic channels, you know, if you've got an account at the Trade Desk, you can buy us there. There's any major DSP, our network is available on it. And so we do see a lot of traffic coming from programmatic buyers that just want to have a PMP deal and include that in their broader omni-channel video campaign or whatever sort of digital campaign they're running. On the flip side, we do a lot of managed service as well. We're working a little more directly with the agency and the client. When we go that route, we can be a little bit more tailored in terms of what we're doing and sometimes a little more creative too in how we deploy the campaign. In terms of the services, you know, the biggest one is planning. So really understanding the audience they want to get in front of and tailoring a set of stores within our network that are going to achieve those objectives. We have a bunch of data on the folks that go into these stores. And so we can, if they tell us, you know, this is the kind of audience we want to reach, we can then build a list of all the stores that are going to make sense for that. And there's things too, like, where you can get a little more fun, like based on the brand, do you want to do certain types of day partying? Do you want to run at evening hours in the morning? Like, cause that's going to change a little bit how the message is received and the audience it's in front of. And then on the creative side, I mean, typically the brands we're working with, they already have creative available from their other video campaigns that they're running online. Cause it's the same kind of format, you know, either 16:9 or 9:16, but in cases where they need to help with creative, we have an in-house design team and love to help with that and get involved there often. Especially when it's some of the ones that are a little more bespoke and a little more unique to the retail category or the grocery category itself. And then, I mean, the last bit, of course, you finish your campaign up, we do reporting and all the standard kind of stuff you'd expect. But we can also, of course, if we're doing studies on that campaign, work with them and bring in our data team to get them the information they're going to need to understand if it performed to the level that they wanted.
Marlo, the day part example gets very interesting. Because in inside of a grocery store, many parts of the center store are only relevant during certain times of the day. Snack could be one that's all day long, but the front end deli, etc., could be lunch or dinner only. Certain breakfast foods only cater themselves to morning. Fruits could cater themselves to morning. So I'd love to listen to your vision of day part and how are you doing that for anybody today?
Yeah, I mean, it's less common than we would like just because a lot of times for brands, they've got a bigger campaign objective and we're kind of one slice of that, right? But if we can work with them a bit more closely and do a bit more work on the creative side, then yeah, you can start to get into that. To give an example, like we've done cases where we'll have creative for the morning hours and then creative for the evening hours that differ and kind of have messaging that talks to that. So like, you know, you might say, hey, getting your day started, this product's great for that. Or end of the day, you know, you're kind of running low on energy. Here's how you might use it. There's also ones that we've done that are more functional use cases. So like, you know, if it's, let's say it's raining outside, like rain getting you down, check this out, right? So you can sometimes tailor the creatives that way. But then from an audience standpoint, to your point, in the morning hours versus afternoon versus evening, you're going to have a bit of a different mix of folks that are coming into the store. Because obviously someone that's working is not going to be shopping from 9 to 5. They're going to be doing more evening type shopping or maybe on Sundays or Saturdays. So that'll have impacts on the audience that you're reaching.
Sounds good. So that day part example, when the communication is actually created, the creative morning, evening, does the ad have to run 24 hours or as long as the store is open? Could somebody tell you, hey, I only want to run it with a lunch occasion that runs from 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m.?
Yeah, for sure. And frankly, that's when we talk about working more directly with us, either through like a PMP or a managed service type campaign. That's one of the biggest advantages you get is if you day part correctly, you're going to get a lot more value out of the dollars you're spending. You know, I hate to admit this, but like a lot of the stuff we see come through the exchanges, they'll spend equally through the whole day. And the way that measurement works in our space today, they don't really consider those very different in terms of like how impressions work. But you actually can get a lot more scale and effectiveness for your dollar if you kind of pace out how you do your impressions, with more of it being focused on the evening hours when you've got more traffic in the store, or within days of the week when we know that there's going to be more people in the grocery store. And then, yeah, I mean, if it impacts your creative too, like you might say, I'm only going to want to run this during this block because that's relevant for this creative.
Kind of makes sense, Marlo. Thanks for addressing those. Here on the CPG Guys, the last question we typically have, we call it fast forward, where we ask you to take a crystal ball, kind of look through the future. You know, Peter and I would agree with you that in the last year, the craziness of being purely online has kind of slowed down to the customers coming back, or shoppers, start guests, whatever you call them, back in store, the browsing aisles, the footfall and traffic is starting to return to the peak 2019 kind of levels. Inflation may be getting in the way of how many come in store, but it's certainly back to 2019. So if you keep that as the backdrop, what do you see happening here in the grocery industry that gives you great confidence that in-store digital advertising platforms are the ones for you to chase, investors to chase, as well as for brands to chase?
I think the biggest one is just seeing the build out of the infrastructure, right? It's not like retail media online where you can just drop some code into your website and go. You got to put physical stuff in your stores, and there's a lot of stakeholders involved in that. It's not just the marketing or media team. It's also the store ops people, right? And so just getting those networks built out, I think, is the biggest thing that's ahead of us right now. And we're trying to do everything we can to make it as easy as possible for retailers to push that forward. And, you know, we're seeing it just in the last 6 months, like the amount of retailers coming in and asking us, like, I've got these screens in store, what do I do with them? Or I want to put screens in store. How should I think about that? Where should I put them? How can I monetize it? How can I capitalize it? Like, that's happening more and more and more. And I think that's kind of what's ahead for the next 18 to 24 months, is just seeing that build out happen and creating more and more access to that audience that's really, really valuable. The other side of it that I think is going to have to happen, and I think inevitably will, but it's probably going to be on a brand by brand basis, is seeing barriers come down on budgets, right? You know, there's a lot of brands I talk to that they have these very strict lines of separation, and they'll say, look, if you're in the four walls of the store, you are shopper marketing and you're nothing else. And then you talk to the shopper marketing team and they say, well, I don't buy stuff like this. And so that brand, because of those barriers they've created internally, can't access the format. And then their competitors, you know, they say, hey, look, it's just programmatic. It's just video. You don't really care like what to call it. It's an extension of what I'm already spending online. For those, they can just jump right in and it's super easy for them to start activating. And I think more and more are going to start to do that. I mean, the ones that are leading the charge are getting, frankly, an advantage right now, in some cases, even exclusivity on their categories. But I think that's probably the biggest one that's going to really kind of drive the category forward. And I think the last one that I would throw in is kind of interesting is, I think people are starting to wake up now to just, when you look at online advertising, especially things like social media, how good we have gotten at ignoring the ads that are on there. I mean, I watch this with my friends and family, like, they're on Instagram, right? They're scrolling like this. And then the moment they get to an ad, they flick in this totally different way. And it's like an instinctive thing that they just know how to do. And we see it in survey results. People don't pay attention to those ads. If it's like a more entertainment channel, or like a YouTube, like obviously you've got incredible attention on that channel. but it's annoying when you have a pre-roll pop up in front of it and try to block you from watching the thing that you actually wanted to watch. And so I think there's going to start to be more and more recognition that, like, we got to go back to the basics a little bit and, like, think about how we approach our audience and, like, are we actually getting their attention in a way that they want us to, and, you know, provide a message into them that's interesting and relevant. So all of that, I think, bodes well for in-store, but, you know, that's probably my prediction for you. Yeah.
I want to remind our audience, please go to cpgguys.com. You can find all of our content. Our episodes are all organized by topics. You can filter on whatever topic that's of interest to you, retail media, data and analytics. So you can find our episodes very easily. And of course, if you or your company have some thought leadership you think could contribute to this ongoing community discussion, drop us an email at contact@cpgguys.com and maybe you can join us for a future episode of the podcast. And of course, if you're on Apple or you're on Spotify, please, please, please give us a rating. It will help us feed the algorithm, make our podcast more findable so that people like you in this industry can avail themselves of the education and entertainment that we are purveying. And of course, lastly, Sri and I always want to thank our followers. We're now at 30,000 strong. Hard to believe, Sri, it's been 4 years since we launched this podcast and 30,000 people are following us on LinkedIn. Marlo, thank you for helping us demystify the future of in-store audience attraction and communication. I think it's huge. I see a lot of people talking about this in trade magazines, up on stage. Hardly a trade show goes by the last couple of months without talking about these vast audiences, particularly the ones that are able to reach consumers that have cut the cord on linear television, but they're still shopping physical stores. It's a great way to be able to do that. And I'm going to encourage anyone, you want to hear more about what Grocery TV is doing, click on the hyperlink to Marlo's LinkedIn profile and drop him a message. I'm sure he'd be more than happy to have a conversation going with you. But Marlo, thanks for taking the time to speak with Sri and me. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks again for having me on.
Absolutely. So Sri, I saw you fastidiously jotting down notes on the video cam. You got a whole page. Wow. Okay. A page and a half. You liked what you heard. Share with us what some of your summary thoughts on what you heard Marlo talking about. There was a lot there for me. I want to hear what you think.
You know, Peter, the first thing I'll say is timing is everything, right? Most brands today are struggling with how to drive volume again in store, given the whole, no secret here. All the no magic here, all the inflation, things of that nature. They're trying to drive traffic that's focused on their brands. So Marlo, timing is everything. So this is great timing that you've joined us when brands have such an acute need. Second thing I'll say from a timing perspective is RMNs are hot, hot, hot. Right at the top of this program, we mentioned maybe the previous recording that we did with Roundel, we mentioned the timing to really take that next pivot in growth on retail media networks is now. And so what is Grocery TV? An in-store retail media network. You're touching over 4,400 stores, 70 million shoppers on a monthly basis. But the most important word there is you're still growing. God knows how big this is going to get. So you start out originally through the checkout aisle. You know, I had gone over to your website. The three of you, through your own personal endeavors, passions, kind of said, as the magazine world was dying, is this an option for you? And the audience was actually expanded steadily to a point where now it's non-endemic and endemic. You give some examples. Insurance is one we discussed. Obviously, when it comes to non-endemic, there's much more than just insurance in that world. But that was a very good example, especially when it comes to, when you started talking about the different aisles and pieces within a store on the pharmacy side, perhaps insurance is not a bad one. Just kidding. Then we started going, how did you start? Small, not even regional, maybe the 10 stores, 15 stores, malls and paws, where you've now started going, I won't say just hyper-regional, but super-regional. You gave the Wakefern kind of ShopRite example as your backdrop. And then how do you do this? Back to basics of advertising. Pick great channels, make brands feel safe, aka the brand safe way. And then make sure that what you deliver is always contextual. How do you do that? Partnership with brands. And then you refer to 85% transactions are in-store. So let's leverage that way forward. Peter and I could not agree more with you, because 85% of an over a $1 trillion economy is a lot of money. So how do you actually pay attention to that lot of money? And the big unlock there, I would say, is that 85%, which you gave the clean example of shopper marketing funds that really for lower funnel activation. Trade budgets tend to be larger than media budgets, and you're associating with yourself with that 80% formula versus the 20% media formula. So Marlo, well done. Congratulations for cracking that code. And then you talked about your expansion plans involving national reach plus density as well in market where you exist. Then we jump to some other areas within store. Obviously, you have to be present in lobby to make a dramatic difference. Checkout, which you're already there, but checkout lends itself more to educational because the shopping trip is already over at that point. It would be for next time. We already briefly mentioned pharmacy, but the most important thing here was you referred to attaching all of these different trip need states to contextuality and leveraging seasonality as well in the process. From a measurement perspective, footfall, site traffic, those are the two biggest ones I picked up. Obviously, Lyft would be a piece of it, but through carefully tailored control and test methodology to be able to get down to better levels of detail. And then we asked you, are you a white label? I think the important thing I wanted to hear from you is the retailer is a partner. Those were your exact words, not a customer. So you're not selling. How are you making it easy for the retailer? It's really that CapEx investment, the CapEx cost. You're finding a way to keep that CapEx cost down and inviting retailers to partner with you, bringing their marketing teams on to be able to build content and not feeling your custom in-house creative is the only way to go, which is very important because those retailers are engaging with brands every day on the RMN side. So this now becomes part of enhancing an RMN package. So for brands, my message is brands are looking to get back in store. RMN is hot. It's the way. Audience, you give numbers, 70 million shoppers on a, I keep saying monthly or weekly, Marlo. I think that's weekly, correct?
Yeah, so if you think about most shoppers, I think Peter said this stat earlier, 3 in 4 of us go to the store every week, right? Some people actually more than that too.
Kind of look at those numbers. You want to get back in store. You want to drive traffic. Clearly, in-store, grocery TV, one of those ways to get there. Pretty straightforward, right? Then you refer to the next chapter, kind of get national scale for certain retailers, but you'll always be anchored on brand objectives. Then we gave the number, right, of the 14% lift example that was important to hear. And at the time of this recording, you have a study coming out shortly. By the time this recording is released, the study should already be out. So we'll be looking forward to it, Marlo, to send us the study. We'll post it here on the CPG guys for our audience to look at as well, those that don't have access to it directly from you guys. It's good that you have an in-house design team to work with retailers and brands to create communication. I love the day part example because more and more, you know, when advertisers advertise, a lot of contextuality gets diluted when you advertise all day long. So having day part can make a true difference. I don't often hear of day part other than in linear programming, how you do that. So that's fantastic. And then we talked a little bit about the future. I think the single biggest thing for me for the future is the store graphics come back. You're breaking barriers in technology as budgetary needs will be going down. And most importantly, you're making the OPEX, CAPEX, call it what you may process, a whole lot easier. So I'm looking forward to see how you guys do. Looking forward to see how brands leverage grocery TV and how brands actually get back to their muscle, which is in-store.
Sri, thanks for that awesome summary. I would encourage brands that are interested in getting some exposure in-store to, as I said previously, reach out to Marlo. His LinkedIn profile is hyperlinked in the digital liner notes of this episode. And as always, Sri, thanks for joining me on this journey of learning and exploring. We love doing this because nobody learns more from this podcast, frankly, than Sri and me. And we get to ask the questions we want to ask. So what's bad about that, right? That's awesome. Sri, thanks again. And to our audience, we're so grateful that you choose us to educate and entertain you. We take that job very seriously, though it sounds like sometimes we're just kidding around with ourselves. It is a serious pursuit for us, and we thank you for your fellowship in following us. And we look forward to speaking with you on the next episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Goodbye. content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.